Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Alice G., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Tuesday, June 7th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on the chapter Bill's Story on page 8, third paragraph, starting with near the end of that bleak November and reading that one paragraph only. Today's readers are Lisa J.R. on the text, Kara L., page 164, Eileen M. is our backup, Sharon B. is our newcomer greeter, Betsy H. is on announcements, and Justin B. and Joanne L. are doing the steps and traditions. The share ID number for Monday, June 6, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 19,038. That's 19038. And for Tuesday, June 7th, 2022, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 19,041. That's 19041. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. Overeaters Anonymous fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Justin B. to read the 12 steps for us, please.
Good morning, this is Justin B., a son of God and a gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Washington, and these are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. Step 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks, I'm Justin, I'll pass.
Thanks, Justin. I will now ask Joanne L. to read the 12 traditions, please.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Alice. Thanks for your service. Joanne L. in Rhode Island, recovered. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Least problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Joanne L. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 8, the third paragraph, and I will ask Lisa J.R. to begin reading that one paragraph only. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Alice. Thanks for your service, and thanks, everybody, for allowing me to do service. Lisa J.R. from outside Baltimore, Maryland, gratefully recovered by God's grace. One day at a time. Well, near the end of that bleak November, I sat drinking in my kitchen. With a certain satisfaction, I reflected that there was enough gin concealed about the house to carry me through the night and that next day. My wife was at work. I wondered whether I dare hide a full bottle of gin near the head of our bed. I would need it before daylight. Oh my goodness. I can't help but think that as I read that first couple lines that Bill Wilson was inspired by Edgar Allan Poe, his poem The Raven, once upon a midnight dreary as I pondered weak and weary. So this whole paragraph here is a condensed version of that end of my disease as well. And I'm so grateful that we get to go through this Big Book over and over and over. I can never get enough of it, because I have to be reminded from time to time how hopeless and helpless I was, how bleak, desolate, and without hope of anything I was in this disease. And still, despite it all, being on that yo-yo string from the disease, like Bill on page 6, you know, swaying dizzily, in front of a medicine cabinet or an open window, cursing himself for being a weakling. I wanted to die. I felt that way. I wanted it to be over. I knew I was licked. I waffled around in step one for a long, long time, decades, as a matter of fact. So still, the magical magnifying mind would tell me, you know, gosh, I've got enough food around here to make it through the day. And that's basically, it became a day-by-day service to the disease. Everything else took a back seat to the disease, you know. And I can really relate towards the end. You know, I wondered whether I dare hide a full bottle of gin near the head of our bed. I would need it before daylight. You know, while his wife's at work, he's thinking about the night to come. He's planning for the withdrawals. He's planning on needing the food. And many times when my husband was asleep, I would wake up in the dark and start wolfing down something. I always kept something by the bed in case I woke up. It was very pitiful, but we're, you know, we've gotten a sketch up to this point of how bleak the illness was for Bill Wilson and how hopeless, and the swath, the collateral damage around him, his wife, his family, you know, the effects of this on everyone that cared and loved him and cared for him. And but now we're about to get into this place where, you know, despite how dark and hopeless this disease makes us feel, Ebby is about to punch through the dark ceiling and light is about to shine in. And, you know, without this program, without God speaking to me through you and through this literature, I was a very little use to anybody. But now, by God's grace, I can be of use. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Lisa J.R. I will now take a list of names of those who would like to share. And please remember that although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share today? Star 1 to unmute.
Anne Marie M.
Shanna C.
Penny L.
I've got Anne Marie M., Shanna C., Penny L. C.,
Ramona A.
Ramona A. All right, we'll start there. I've got my lineup of Anne Marie M., Shanna C., Penny L. C., and Ramona A. We'll start there. Anne Marie, please press star 1 to unmute and share with us today.
Good morning. This is Anne Marie M. in South Carolina, through God's grace, recovered from compulsive overeating and grateful to be here. I just knew I had to share. And as it was just spoken, this is what a great remembrance this what is for me to remember where I was. I used to get up in the middle of the night and drive. If there was nothing in the house, and I would wait desperately for my husband to fall asleep and drive out to any convenience store I could get to. And I remember also driving home from work. I used to work 3 to 11 and would stop at any convenience store that was open on the way home. And I just raced there. My mind was so focused on getting that food, that comfort that I wanted so I thought I needed so desperately. And no matter, I did not remember what it did to me. I did not remember the horror of the next day, the feeling of the headache, the gassy stomach, the wanting not to get out of bed, waking up thinking, oh gosh, you know, another day. And now I wake up and say, oh gosh, thank God. I thank you, God, for this day. And what are we going to be doing today? How can I be helpful to someone else? I was just so self-centered in my disease. And just it was always all about me and how badly I felt. And I could not think of you know, if there was anything I could do for anyone else. And what a change. And it's through this program. For me, it was getting another a God that I wanted to have a relationship with. You know, I knew that God wanted to have a relationship with me, but I wasn't sincere. I didn't have that sincerity in wanting that relationship with God. I wanted a relationship so that he would get me abstinent. You know, that was it. But I worked this program very hard, and I look forward to sponsoring. It helps me to go through the book again. So, Anne Marie M. in South Carolina, thank you.
Thank you so much, Anne Marie M. in South Carolina. I now have Shanna C. followed by Penny L. C. Shanna, please share with us.
Good morning. This is Shanna C., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Tennessee. I felt moved to share this morning just because I am reminded again that this is a true miracle for my life, that I am able to, it's not me that's doing it. It's God demonstrating through me what only He can do, and that's evidence that for me that God exists, because there is absolutely no way that I have been able to put down the food and to be neutral about it, and to be not just neutral but happy about it. That those thoughts of I get to eat this way, I get to be experiencing the miracles and the presence of a power greater than myself in my life, the miracle of answered prayer, other people seeing a change that's happening in me that I, in big picture, that I'm really not having to work that hard for. Whereas before, when I was trying to do this thing in my own power, it was just absolute torture and whatnot. I couldn't do it. It was impossible, absolutely impossible. And what that means, and I'm reminded of that mental obsession where no matter my intentions, no matter how much I want it, no matter how hard I try, I would still go back and pick it up, and I would come up with an idea that somehow, someday, I'm going to control and enjoy my eating. I remember, you know, at that time, I was in the middle of another fellowship, 12-step recovery, and I remember leaving those meetings and being of service, and then all of a sudden needing to stop by Whole Foods, you know, thinking because Whole Foods is healthy, you know, have healthy food and all of this stuff, I'll just go in and try some samples. And just because I don't want to be alone, you know, and all this stuff, I'm scared to go home and all of this stuff and be by myself. And so I would pick up a few samples and, oh, I'll just get a box of this and then a box of that and then have it eaten by the time I got home. It's the craziest thing. But anyway, so once I start putting that food into my body, I can't stop, and I can't stop those thoughts from coming, even though I want too. But I'm so grateful that within that 12-step fellowship, there was a sponsor that I had that had enough humility to understand the traditions and all, who was able to say, you know what, I can't help you with this one. I don't have experience with the compulsive overeating. And yes, sometimes we do need to get the outside help. And that's with that bearing in mind, I was able, once I got to that level of desperation where I saw I absolutely had to have God's help, and whatever that ended up looking like, whatever I had to do, I had to do it. Another compulsive overeater with a similar background as me was able to help me. And I'm so grateful that you guys were here for me when I needed you, and by God's grace, haven't found it necessary to eat compulsively since September of 2019. And it is a miracle, and I'm so grateful and happy to help in whatever way I can.
Time, right, please.
Thanks for listening. Have a great day, you guys.
Thank you, Shanna C. from Tennessee. Next, we have Penny L. C., followed by Ramona A. And if anybody jumped on a little bit late, we are on page 8, third paragraph. Penny, please share with us. Star 1 to unmute, Penny. Penny LC, star 1 to unmute. Okay, maybe Penny can call back in. Ramona A, are you there? Can you star 1 and unmute and share with us, please?
Hi, yes, this is Ramona A in Vermont. I'm recovered, and when I think about what Bill was going through at this time, I think I started very early. I remember sneaking food when I was younger than a teenager. You know, I had a bedroom downstairs, my next to the kitchen. My folks were upstairs, and I would sneak out and slice off a little bit of a pie or slice off a little bit of a piece of cake or something like that, and think that it would never be noticed. And of course, after a while, there wasn't much left at all, and it was very noticed. And I think I started at that time, I was always concealing food, always trying to sneak food. You know, I kept something when I was older and had an office, you know, in the office drawers, and or I would go downstairs to the vending machine, you know, thinking, okay, nobody else is around now, you know, it's not really coffee break, you know, I can go down and get something. And that just kept on, you know, well, with everything that was in my life. And the time came too when I saw that I would say no to somebody, you know, that I'm not going to eat that, you know, if you're buying for a party or for the family or something like that, don't worry, I'm not going to eat any. And I'd be the one who would end up eating most of it. And it just totally demoralized me. You know, I felt humiliated. I felt shame, you know, of what I was doing, but I couldn't stop. You know, I just couldn't stop. There were just so many things I did that were felt humiliating and embarrassing, and I still couldn't stop. And when I got really desperate, I remember I had seen or experienced another 12-step program a little bit, and I still though said, well, I want to lose weight. And went to one of these pay and ways, and they asked me a lot of questions and got this, and I didn't even want to tell them the answers, you know. And after I was out of the interview, I went and bought, you know, like a dozen donuts and ate those. And I said, okay, I know that I have to go to OA. I know there's a 12-step group that is for eating also, not just for other things. And when I went there, I don't know if it was the next day or very soon, you know, that I could find a meeting. And I just said, I'm home. This is where I need to be. And that's been quite a while ago, you know, many, many days ago.
Time, please.
And I've been abstinent. Okay, thank you. You know, I'm recovered, and it's the best thing in my life. So with that, I pass.
Thank you, Ramona A. in Vermont. Penny L.
Hi, Alice, I am on the line. Yeah.
Yay.
So sorry about that. I could not get unmuted. I apologize to the
no
meeting.
Problem.
Thank you. Thank you for your service, Alice. Good morning, and good morning to everyone on the line. This is Penny L.C., a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. Bleak. Oh, boy. Not only was, you know, the world around me bleak, but my whole spirit was bleak. Cold, desolate, dismal, dreary, gloomy, you name it. That pretty much summed up where I was at the end of my eating, compulsive overeating career. My twisted thinking had me allowing myself to consider my behaviors as justified and rationalized that I would have stashes of food in the house, something at my bedside table drawer, something in the back of the freezer, a cold item that I'd usually have to buy two of containers because one was for the family and then, of course, one was for me. I usually finish mine and then work on theirs too. Oh my gosh. There was just never enough, you know, and yet I knew I was justifying it because I was resentful at my family. I was so self-centered. I was wanting what I wanted when I wanted it, and it didn't matter. The dishonesty that somehow this behavior was okay, and the deep down fear that I was not enough, you know, just operating off of self-propulsion. There was no higher power in sight. There was no thought of perhaps, you know, I might need some spiritual help. Yes, I believed in my higher power. I believed in a higher power, but did I rely on that higher power? Not in the least. I was trying to control not only my food, I was trying to control my family and my circumstances in life. You know, it was just horrendous. And but I love that it's always darkest before the dawn, because in the bleakness of that part of my world, I was then able to be at a point where I was willing to reach out for a new way of life. and I found these 12 steps and this solution that has been life-changing. And I'm so grateful. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Penny L.C. from the state of Washington. I will now take another list of names of those who would like to share. Star 1 to unmute.
Cynthia V.G.
I'm sorry, can you say that again? Cindy F.?
Sure. Cynthia, S-I-V-I-A, V-G.
Noel E.
Loxie J.
Loxie.
Stephen G.
Stephen G.
Wendy V.
All right, I will start there. And correct me if I'm wrong, if when I say your name, I've got Ivia G, Noel E, Loxie, Stephen G, and Wendy B. Ivia, I want to unmute and share with us, please.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. This is Cynthia. Hi, everybody. Thank you. It is so good to be back to the meetings. I did go on vacation, and I was in a really faraway time zone, and I am so grateful to be here and hear the meetings. And I just wanted to talk about this. Bill is in the process of describing how, you know, I mean, we read the other day about how he was in quicksand all around him, and how here he is figuring out how he's going to almost plan his demise. And he was at such a low point. And I remember my low point. My son was threatening to commit suicide. My husband I discovered that he was being online indiscreet. And I was about 70 pounds overweight, and my life was miserable, but I could no longer see my therapist, and she recommended that I go to OA. And thank God she did. That was about 13 years ago. In July will be the anniversary of my reaching my normal weight. And I realized, not immediately, because it took me a couple years. So for those of you who haven't been OA for very long, it for some of us, we're slow learners and it takes a while. Be patient and kind to yourselves. But I remember just realizing that these people, the first couple meetings, is these people are all weirdos. They've swallowed the Kool-Aid and I'm not like them. And I looked at the differences in everybody, why these people are all different than me. And it wasn't for a while that I finally realized, and I heard the right story that made me realize that, no, we are all alike. We use food to help soothe our souls. And that's not the way I wanted to be anymore. It wasn't working. It might have worked when I was 5 years old, sucking on the ice cream or whatever. And so I began this journey, and it's had its ups and downs. I have not been cleanly abstinent for the 13 years, but I have to say is no matter what happened, I never left these rooms, ever. And when you leave the rooms, that's going to be the hard part coming back. So no matter where you are in your journey, please stay in the rooms if that's the only thing you do in this program for a while. Just keep coming back. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much. You are all a blessing. You are all beautiful children of your higher power. And no matter what you look like or where you are loved by your higher power. Thank you.
Thank you, Vivia G. Noel E., please star 1 to share with us and share where you're from, followed by Loxie.
Hi, this is Noel E. I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Louisiana. Thank you for your service on this line, everyone, and thank you for all the previous shares. That's really what's inspired me to share today. The part of the reading, though, that stood out to me was, like, why my wife was at work. That has been, you know, my my disease has really taken flight, had really taken flight in the last 8 years in pregnancy and young motherhood. And it was while my husband was at work, while my kids were at school, where it was just annihilation. You know, like, how much shelf abuse can I fit into these hours of the day? And then what story do I have to create to, you know, to defend what I was doing all day? And that was just like every day for years. And I'm at home right now. My kids are at school. My husband is at work. And this is what God has brought me to. Like, you know, same me, same house, same scenario. There hasn't been a geographic, you know, fix. And this is the miracle God has worked, that this is, you know, what I'm doing with my time. The shares everybody was giving, especially like the eating in the middle of the night stuff, I just want to say that I like the last person shared, I just don't ever have any intention of leaving the room, because even though that was never my brand, I never, you know, got up in the middle of the night and ate like that. The evidence of the places this disease can go are what what keep me coming back, you know, of people just describing the pain and the miracle. They go hand in hand, because I, you know, when I was a little kid, I didn't know that the disease would take me to where it took me, thinking that, you know, if I wasn't around, everybody would be a little bit better. I had no idea that this disease had that capability. And, you know, like it says on page 24, we are unable to pull into consciousness with sufficient force the memory of a day or a month ago or whatever, however it's worded. That's, you know, the testimony of people, like has been given this morning, of how dangerous the disease can get is just the service that I'm so grateful for in this moment. So thank you guys all again, and I hope everybody has a beautiful day. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Noelle E. from Louisiana. Loxie, you're up next, followed by Stephen G. Star 1 to unmute and share with us where you're from, please.
Hi, this is Loxie from Kentucky, compulsive overeater. This paragraph, with a certain satisfaction, I reflect there was enough gin concealed about the house to carry me through the night and the day. How many times have I said, I have enough food, I have enough binge food, I'm going to be okay. Food became the solution to numb my truth. One of my sick truths was, I deserve to suffer. I deserve to be silent. And working through the steps and being brutally honest with myself and my sponsor, the truth is, food was my God. Food was my higher power. And now I've put the food down. Now God's my higher power. And it's a new freedom I have never, ever known. And I'm so grateful for the program. I'm so grateful for the truth of this. I see myself in that. If I have enough food, I'll be okay. And I didn't know how much that really kept me hurting myself, hurting other people around me, my selfishness, my controlling behavior, when all I had to do was a few simple steps and let go and let God be the entity that I'm okay. And it's one day at a time, and it's because of this program. And I'm very grateful. With that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Loxie from Kentucky. Stephen G., star 1 to unmute and share with us, and you'll be followed by Wendy B.
Hi, good morning. This is Stephen G., recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. I'm grateful to be here today. Thanks for everybody's service and for the really good shares. Bill Wilson here is describing the kind of the end of the line of the disease, the mental obsession, the allergy of the body, permanent, progressive, fatal. And he's gotten to the point here. This is the same man who received a medal for bravery in World War I. This is the same man that studied law, that was a stockbroker whose ideas and opinions were followed by hundreds on Wall Street. And now he's alone in the dark in his house. His wife is supporting him working a minimum wage job at a department store. And this is the 1920s. So he's at the end of the line and complete hopelessness, which is the prerequisite for him being able to accept the solution, which is entire abstinence, plus what he's going to learn in the next couple of paragraphs, a spiritual experience as the result of working the 12 steps. And for me, I came to this point in my last relapse, which was about 10 years ago. He talks about having gin concealed and a full bottle of gin near the head of the bed. When I ate, I got a brief reprieve. And then when that wore off, then I was faced with the immediate effects of eating, which is, you know, being sweating, pain in my mouth, full stomach, nausea, and then also the long-term effects of eating, which is the obesity, and also the emotional effects of the accumulated wreckage of my past, which I had to deal with. And the only solution I had for all of those things was to eat again. And eventually I came to the point of hopelessness, and then I was willing to do what it takes, entire abstinence plus the 12 steps as, or the spiritual experience as the result of working the 12 steps like they're outlined in the big book. And my life has been transformed. Yesterday I ate supper at 5 p.m. and then I didn't eat again until this morning at 8 a.m. That's 15 hours. That never could have happened, and I couldn't do that on my own. I didn't wake up nauseous. I woke up in a healthy body. That's a miracle, but I had to be willing to do things that I didn't want to do until I was hopeless. Things that are actually quite simple. Entire abstinence plus the 12 steps as a result of following this big book. And the transformation has been miraculous, but I needed to be hopeless. And that's where Bill Wilson is now. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Stephen G. from Toronto, Canada. Wendy B., star one to unmute and share with us, please.
Hi, this is Wendy V as in Victor from California. Thank you for your service. So I'm listening to Bill's story, and I always like to go back a couple of paragraphs to see exactly where he's at. And I'd say he is about as close to reality in this exact paragraph right here than he's probably been through the whole story, because he's no longer in denial. He's not out. You know, he's got an ego, and here's a man who wants to make money and show to the world, you know, how important he is. He's got a huge ego, and he's no longer able to impress anybody. He's no longer to pull in the dollar signs that make him look important. He's no longer able to look like anything other than a drunk in bed. And I think he has even accepted the fact that this is it. And nobody likes to hear this, but I think, and what I relate to, is that Bill surrendered to alcohol before he surrendered to God. I think right in this little paragraph, he knows he's got it concealed everywhere. He surrendered. You go back up two paragraphs, alcohol was my master. About as honest as he's been throughout the entire book, this is the reality, this is the truth, this is where I'm at. Alcohol is my master, and he's living it. He knows he needs it now. There's no more stories to his wife. This is where I, you know, create, you know, my most genius project. There's no more golfing. There's no more anything. No matter how much my pride wants me to look good to the world, I can't. I can't at this point. Alcohol is my master. Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy V. in California. I'll now take another list of names. We have time for about 3 to 4 more shares. If anyone has a desire, star one to unmute.
Joyce in Colorado.
Joyce? What's the first initial of your last name, Joyce?
A. is an apple.
Thank you. Anyone else like to share today? Star one to unmute. We're on page 8, third paragraph. If you haven't shared in the last 3 days, here's your chance to share your experience, strength, and hope. All right,
Michelle,
we'll
go
with A. Michelle J. And there was someone
Cynthia
else.
C.
I'm sorry.
Cynthia C.
Cynthia.
Yeah.
All right, we'll start there. Joyce A. from Colorado. Star one to unmute and share with us, please.
Thank you. Thank you all for your service and for just, you know, having this program available to us all. This is such a powerful paragraph for me. I relate in so many ways. And I was not married. I didn't have a family around. I didn't need to hide my food from anyone. But I would still make sure I had enough to make it through the weekend or make it through the day. I'd go to work the next day, and my first thought after work was over, I'd sit in the car and think, do I have enough food to last me through the night or maybe two nights? And if not, man, the grocery store was the first place I went to. I was there more often than I was home. And I would try so hard to ration it out. I'll only have six pieces of this, or I'll only have one slice of that today, and tomorrow I can have another slice. And sometimes it worked, and sometimes, man, it just gobbled down, and I don't know where it went. It was like I was possessed by a demon, and in all practical purposes, I probably was. Until I finally got into therapy, and I broke down to my therapist and said, why can't I stop? What is wrong with me that I can't stop eating? And she just leaned forward and she said, you're an addict. And it was like a slap in the face. I had no idea that that's what an addict was like. I was so isolated and so alone, and had nothing to compare my life to. But in that moment, I realized, yes, I am just like my father was with alcohol. I'm just like a drug addict is with his drug of choice. I was a smoker, so I knew what that addiction felt like. It just rattled me to the core. And that's exactly what I needed. She suggested that I find a 12-step meeting, and I went to it that night. And I cried through the whole thing. I could so relate with every person that shared. And that was the beginning of my recovery. It was not the end of the road for sure. I spent years from 2000. Oh, thank you. I'll wrap up. I was in it for years and years before I have now actually found my abstinence and found my peace with God. And I encourage everyone to stick with it until the miracle happens. So thank you, and with that, I will pass.
Thank you, Joyce A. from Colorado. Michelle J., please share with us. Star one to unmute.
Thank you. Thank you. This is Michelle J. calling in from Arkansas. I've been part of Vision for maybe almost 4.5 years now, and I'm an addict. I'm a food addict. And one of the things that is striking really, really close to home is that realization that aloneness, being alone, waiting until you are alone, me. I'm just going to talk about me today. You know, waiting when I'm alone. That's not a good thing. I was just sharing with somebody this morning that when I first started a program 4.5 years ago, I saw these four aspects of this program that would help me to succeed and help me to stay out of my addiction. The first one was the biological. I had to stop the whatever it was that was getting into my body, and I had to stop it so that I wouldn't have those compulsive addictive drives. And then the second one was I needed a higher power. I needed to have a solid relationship with God so God could give me what I needed, the power to say no. The third one was the psychological, you know, somewhere in the later on, you know, I'm doing my fourth, fifth, sixth, and it was all about these emotions and all that, all those memories and all the stuff that I was trying to disassociate myself from at all times. And I learned to disassociate from all pain by eating. So, but that fourth one was this, and I saw it loud and clear, relationship with you guys. Not being alone, not being isolated. And I heard it over and over about isolation. If I'm isolating, if I'm saying I can't wait until my husband is gone because I know what I have in that cupboard. When that's a key, if I can stay just listening to anybody. If I don't feel like talking, I don't have to. I can just call. There are so many visions. You know, every morning you've got an early, a middle, a third. We've got another Christian one on Tuesdays and Thursday mornings. We've got so many really awesome opportunities to be in fellowship with people who understand what we're feeling. When we fail, when we succeed, when we're doing great, we need each other. And that's my fourth stool leg. And I have to have all four going if I'm going to succeed today for the next 24 hours. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Michelle J. from Arkansas. Cynthia C., we have about 2 minutes left, if you can make it 2 minutes.
I'm sorry, this is Cynthia C. I was unmuting, and I think you were saying something.
Oh, I was saying we have about 2 minutes.
Okay, I'll make it short and sweet.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, moderator, for your service. And I've just gotten so much out of what everybody has said. And I just, this passage always, 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 always speaks to me. You know, I also, like everybody else, can remember, or, you know, grateful that I can remember how, you know, just how low I was, you know. And I had, you know, I had chocolate. I had my alcoholic food hidden everywhere in my house and in my office, and I was unhappy, and I was miserable, and I was making everybody around me miserable. I felt entitled, and I felt like a victim, and I felt miserable, and I couldn't see my partner, you know, and I think I played the happy part, you know, I played the happy card, but I really wasn't. And we just got out of a Jewish 3-day holiday where I don't use a phone, and I can't get on meetings, and I sat there, and I really, you know, I worked the steps as much as I, you know, I worked the steps, I connected in, I really tried to lean into higher power as much as I possibly could, and I thought about, you know, from 5 years ago, when I came in the room, you know, before I came in the room, on these Jewish holidays, how much of my alcoholic food I had sitting on the table. How much of my alcoholic food I sat and I ate and I ate and I ate all day long. You know, I ate and I ate and I twisted myself up in a pretzel to like meet everybody else's needs, and I didn't meet my own needs. I couldn't think about what I needed. You know, I just was so caught up in people pleasing and approval seeking and eating and eating and eating. And I'm just so grateful today that, you know, I had my weight and measured meals. I had abstinent food on the table for everyone, you know, and my family could pick and choose, you know, what they needed. But I was just so grateful.
That's time, please.
Thank you. It was not all about binging all day long. So grateful to all of you. Thank you very much for that. I talk.
Thank you, Cynthia C. We will now close the meeting with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Kara L. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Good morning. This is Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater from California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find in joyness. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.